Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2013. Lecture 14, delivered on February 28, 2013. The title of this lecture is Pricing a Share of Common Stock.
Today, pricing a share of common stock. Here's how we do it. First things first. Remember the capital asset pricing model, CAPM. That the discount rate for a share of stock, and this doesn't have to be a share of stock, but we need that discount rate if we are going to price stock. We need that if we're going to price anything as a present value of future cash flows, we need the discount rate to use. That would be the risk-free rate, and remember we use a short-term treasury bill for the risk-free rate as a proxy for it, plus the beta of the stock times the expected return to the market portfolio minus the risk-free rate. Now, that K sub M minus K sub F, that had a name. Do you remember what the name of that was? K sub M minus K sub F? You certainly do. It had a name. Do you remember the Oscar Mayer song? My baloney has a first name, it's O-S-C-A-R. Okay, well, this K sub M minus K sub F has a first name. It's what?
I can't
think of
it right now.
Does anyone remember what it was? I think I just kind of blew it quickly by. That's called the expected return to the market portfolio over risk-free. The expected return to the market portfolio over risk-free. In a shortened way, it's called the market premium. The market premium over risk-free. That's, by the way, a great question for a multiple choice part of an exam. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Okay? So this is the expected return to the market portfolio over risk-free. Otherwise, you'll hear me use the term the market premium, and in parentheses, because I usually don't go on, over risk-free. Okay? But you'll hear me call it the market premium. Technically, it's the market premium over risk-free. Okay? In other words, by investing in the market portfolio, how much do you get instead of, over and above, what you would have gotten if you had taken no risk and just bought T-bills? So remember, the beta of the market portfolio is 1. The beta of the risk of the treasury bill is 0. So this is essentially the pure spread of risk. So if I said the expected return to the market portfolio is 14% and risk-free is 1%, then the market premium is 13%. That's your reward for taking the risk of the market portfolio instead of wussing out and going with T-bills that have no risk. Okay? So remember that, especially for the exam, because like I said, that's just such a classic multiple choice question kind of thing. But anyway, let's do something here. Remember that I can say a share of stock, remember that thing that I did? Price of a share of stock is going to be the dividend one period out over the discount rate for the cash flows from that dividend, K sub S, the discount rate for those cash flows, minus the growth rate of the dividends. That's what I can do. That's how I can get a price. But the first thing, of course, is that I would need that case of F. That's why I have the capital asset pricing model written up there, is because in this way, I can actually calculate the number to stick in there. The growth rate of the dividends, I'll have to work on that. I can usually get a good idea from what has been going on recently with dividends, if the company's got a target growth rate. This is the one that can kick your butt. Watch it. Because I usually will give you what we have is what did they just pay for a dividend? That's not D sub 1, that's D sub 0. So I have to take what I have, I've seen what their dividend they just paid is, and then I have to grow that one period to get the dividend one period out that works that's for the formula. So don't use the dividend I give you, grow it one period. So FRJ common just paid a dividend of 10 cents per share that is expected to grow at a rate of 5% per year for the foreseeable future. And, you know, we can't say it's going to go that way forever, which theoretically the formula would require that be the growth rate forever. But, you know, after a while, it's not going to really matter if it changes down the road a decade or out or something like that. Now, by the way, I'm showing you a problem that would be virtually identical to what's going to be on the exam. So if you get it here, I'm going, oh, damn, I better write this down. So if you get it here, this is a no-brainer on the exam, seriously. I'm trying to telegraph my punch to you. It's because I love you so much. Or, okay, I don't. But look, FRJ common has a beta of 1.25. The expected return to the market portfolio is right now about 15%. And a T-bill right now is yielding 0.75%. Now back even, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago, those would have been bigger numbers than that. Those decimal percentages can trip you up sometimes. What's the price of a share of TFRJ? Of FRJ common, I should say. This is pretty much how I'll do it. Write it on an exam. Now, through the meat grinder. Again, we're going to find the price using this formula right here. But we're not ready to use that formula yet because we've got to get this little thing right here, this case of S. We've got to get it, and that's why we have the capital asset pricing model. The case of S is going to be the risk-free rate plus the beta of FRJ. Times the return to the market, expected return to the market portfolio minus the risk-free rate. Just plug numbers in. Don't think too much about these problems. Save your thinking for what you're going to order for dinner. Okay? Now, with the CAPM, it's okay to use percentages. Just don't use them after you've done the CAPM thing. So I'm going to do 0.75%. That's the case of F. plus the beta of FRJ, which is 1.25, times the expected return to the market portfolio, 15%, minus 0.75%. Okay, I'm doing everything as percentages. It's okay to do it at this step, but I've got to turn it into a decimal when I go for some real math here in a minute. So that's 0.75% plus 1.25, and I'm going to do this step by step just to make sure that you have the whole thing, times the quantity, 14.25%. 14.25% is the market premium. In other words, I get 14.25% more by rolling the dice on the market portfolio than if I throw it into treasury bills. That's what that 14.75% means. I get 14.25% more, I think I said 75, 14.25% more by risking on the market portfolio. That's my reward for taking market risk. Okay, now 1.25 times that is how much that risk is magnified, the non-diversifiable risk that is a factor that is magnifying it for this stock. So in other words, this stock is magnifying that non-diversifiable risk by 1.25 times. Now, flogging that outward here, hoping to God that I can do this in this dark, I'll take 14.25 times 1.25. Whoops, I'm in the wrong thing here. 14.25 times 1.25. So now I've got K sub S is 0.75% plus 17.8125%. That guy right there, that is my expected premium on this stock over the market premium. So in other words, this is the non-diversifiable risk for which I will be rewarded over risk-free. But since every stock should give me at least risk-free, I have to add that in here, plus 0.75. So I finally get that the discount rate for this stock is 18.5625%. That's K sub S that I can now use in this formula right up here. So there's like two steps in this, two different formulas. Cap M first, then the price of the stock second. If you can get that sequence of steps down, this is actually, might be one of the harder problems. It's a no-brainer. It's just 1, 2, 3, and you can put the Cap M and the other formula on your formula card that you can have for the exam. So here we go. Now we're ready to crank on this. The price of the stock is going to be the dividend at period one. But remember, I was given the dividend back here that had just happened. That's D0. So I'm going to have to take that D0 and put it out one period. So I'm going to have to take the D1, the D0, and multiply it by 1 plus the annual growth rate. So in this case, D0 was 10 cents a share, and I'll grow that by 1 plus 0.05, the growth rate. So that means that on top I'll have 0.10 times 1 plus 0.05, and on the bottom I've got this 0.185625 minus the 0.05 growth rate. Can you read that? Let me do that again here. Look at this. That's confusing there. Let me put it in bigger letters. 0.10 times 1 plus 0.05 on top. That's D0 times 1 plus G. Okay? That's what that is right there. Over 0.185625 minus 0.05. That's K sub S minus G. Remember, again, and I, Most of you are probably, it's obvious, but be careful with it. You have to make that a decimal. Cap M, you can use percentages, but you got to turn it into a decimal because now we're doing actual math, arithmetic. So if I honk this out, I got 0.1 times 1.05 is, so what I get is on top 0.105, and on the bottom 0.185625 minus 0.05. So on the bottom I'll have 0.135625. And again, I'm just doing this really step by step so that you won't have any jump that you might wonder what happened. And finally, I can do 0.105 divided by 0.135625. And I get that the price of the stock is rounded to dollars and cents, 77 cents per share. It's a penny stock. That's how you do it. That's how you do it. And that will be a question on the exam. It'll also be a quiz question. I'll give you plenty of time to take the quiz this weekend. But there you go. That's all there is to it. Find the price of a share of stock. This is how it was done for ages. And it's still done this way. Even out in the real world some places, you'll price a share of stock back of the envelope this way. Even to this day, you'll do it that way. But that's finding a price of a share of stock. And then from there, you can go on and you can do other things. But you see this? See that case of S there? Case of F plus the beta of the stock times case of M minus case of F. I want to make sure that you can answer things on the exam just straight up if I ask them in a multiple choice or in an essay question. This one, like I said, this is the market premium over risk-free. This is the beta of the stock. Get you ready for this exam, come hell or high water. Sir, can you tell me what is beta? This is the second letter of the Greek alphabet. Stop it. No. What is beta in finance? You, woman. B sub X. Okay. Mr. Kimmel? Kimmler? I'm sorry.
The risk compared to the rest of the portfolio?
Well, actually, that was about half right. You deserve half of a Girl Scout cookie for that. Okay. You got a better one on me on that one? Go ahead.
Systematic risk of market portfolio.
It's the systematic risk of this stock relative to the market portfolio. The systematic risk of this stock, the non-diversifiable risk of this stock relative to the market portfolio. Now, here are some classic questions for an exam. Madam, what's the beta of the market portfolio?
No way.
Right out the window there, that one went. You will know by the exam, right? Okay. That's why I'm doing this, by the way, is to sort of, I always get it, so it's not a sweat. You got it for me? The beta, what's the beta of the market portfolio? No, it's a number. Number. What's the risk of you compared to you? Oh, someone saved your bacon. Okay? Yeah. The beta of the market portfolio is 1. Because beta measures the systematic risk of a security relative to the market portfolio. So the risk of the market portfolio relative to itself would be exactly 100%, 1.00. So the market portfolio has a risk of 1.00, non-diversifiable risk. So when I said this stock had 1.25 beta, that means its non-diversifiable risk component. The part for which you would expect a reward is 125% of the market's risk. So if I looked at the non-diversifiable volatility of this stock, it would be about, if you looked at it visually, it would be about a fourth as wide the swings would be in this stock as the market portfolio. Now, the overall swings in the stock could be quite a bit more, but that's because there's risk in their volatility that the market doesn't care about. So now, try another one here just to see if anyone's got this one. These are, by the way, classics for multiple choice. I'm trying to help you out here. Sir, what would be the risk of a treasury bill? What would be the beta of a treasury bill? Yes. Beta of a treasury bill is zero because it is risk-free in terms of non-diversifiable risk. So that means that, in other words, if I look at a treasury bill, it has no price volatility at all. Is that correct? It does. You see, just because it has no volatility that beta measures doesn't mean that it doesn't have any volatility at all, because beta measures only the volatility of that security relative to the market. So a treasury bill can have price swings, blah, 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 but none of those have any correlation whatsoever to the market itself. Good. Now, in other words, if you were a conservative investor, if you were one who did not want to just take a lot of risk, you would probably construct a portfolio, put together stocks between beta of 0 and beta of 1, relatively safe companies. If you wanted to just ride the market itself, you would build a portfolio that had a beta of 1. In other words, you choose stocks that weighted together, their betas were about right on 1. So if you were wild and crazy, you wanted to throw risk at your portfolio, you'd simply take stocks that had betas above 1. You would and build a portfolio, because the overall beta of the portfolio will just be the weighted average of the betas of the individual components here. Now, I was going to do something here, and I'll get this set up so that I can get this running here. Now, let's see if you can remember a few other things here. Beta is, true or false here, madam? Beta is always always greater than 0, right?
No,
I
thought
we were. Well, there are a few that are below 0, a few betas. Do you remember? They were called contrarians. Yeah, bears. Essentially, there are a few securities out there that have slightly negative betas. In other words, they are contrarian, bearish, real bear kinds of things that you would take if you really thought the market was completely off its rocker. It was, and you could do these. Do you remember what kinds of stocks that I told you that kind of had that kind of, once in a while you'll find one. If you're looking for negative betas, where you would probably go looking for them. Do you remember what it was? Yeah. Yeah, it was gold mining stocks. Things that have, in other words, where there would be a run to these if all hell broke loose. And I'm doing some review here to finish up to close off this last lecture, but I want to get a couple of things out. What did we call it when you see the market running away from stocks, selling their stocks and buying bonds? Do you remember what we called that? There was a term for it. Important for you to remember these kinds of terms for later in your life, when the zombie apocalypse happens. You remember what it was called? Okay. Let's see if I can jog your memory. Do you remember at all? Okay. Charades. Not flapping, for God's sake. You were right, flying, but not flying.
Floating.
Not floating. Not even in the same. If I had shot glasses, it'd probably work a lot better. Okay, two shots for every time you get it wrong. Okay, no. I didn't say that. Okay, flight. You remember the rest of it? Someone, I think, said it. What it was, flight to? It's called a flight to quality. When you are getting out of stocks and running headlong toward bonds, that's called a flight to quality. Now, in other words, you think that you want to get out of the riskier and into the safer. But if you are really scared, you would not run to, you would first run to bonds. Where would you run after bonds?
Metals.
Metals. You would run from stocks to bonds, bonds to metals. What was the last step if all hell, everything goes to hell? Bullets, yes. Stocks to bonds, bonds to metals, metals to bullets. Fortunately, we're not there yet. But I wanted to pull this up for you. Get off me. Okay. I'm going to pull this up here and look at something here. See if I can get to it. Okay. So, actually, I kind of maybe I should try something else. Finance.msn. Maybe that'll give me a better visual. Finance.yahoo.com. See if I can get something that'll show me something nice. Really? Finance.yahoo.com. Christ. Okay, let me try something. Okay, finance.google.com. Why is this acting like this? Oh, it's got a toolbar that's blocking it. Okay, let me do it this way. What in the heck? They're blocking. Okay. Let me show you this here. I'm going to kill this. Now, here's the stock market. But wait a minute. The stock market doesn't really exist here in the sense that there are all these different indexes of the stock market. The Dow Jones, the Standard & Poor's 500, the NASDAQ. Each of these has a meaning in itself. Dow Jones companies, the 30 Dow Jones companies, are the great, big, massive behemoths of the world, the largest of the big. And then the Standard & Poor's 500, most of the economy is in at least the 500. Those massive companies that you would recognize most of their names if they were told to you, everything from Target to Walmart, from Walmart to Walgreens to Berkshire Hathaway, they're all in there in the S&P 500. The NASDAQ represents smaller cap companies, a wide swath of the companies that are sort of like the base of the small and medium-sized businesses of the economy. Certainly nothing as small as businesses like mine, but there you are. So when we see the movement of these different indices, it tells us about the reactions of the market to the economic impact of expectations on different sizes. So we see the Dow Jones is down 20.88 points. That doesn't mean anything. All we care about is a percentage fall. The Dow Jones, those the absolute numbers, I mean, because the indices are all different have different sizes of numbers. You can't look at the numbers themselves. You have to look at the percentages. But we do see that the Dow is down 0.15%. But the Standard & Poor's 500 is down less than 0.1%. And the NASDAQ is down 0.07%. So then you can begin to construct a pattern of what the market's current sentiment is, what the overall visual that the market is seeing is. So we've got down market, not really too significant at all. Those percentages are just small farts, the ones that pop out of your butt, and you can just, you know, pretend that it didn't happen, you know? What we really get excited about are the ones that are like this silent but absolutely deadly. And then you say to everyone in the room, do I smell popcorn? So everyone breathes in real deep. Okay, where the hell was I before you acted up? Okay, we see here that you see how whatever bad news is bothering the markets right now, it's news that they are assessing is more significant to the bigger the company is. Whatever it is that the market has that's annoying it right now, it's something that they're saying, well, this is going to have more of an impact on huge megalithic companies than it will on the big wide world of the 500. And it won't have much impact at all on that base of the little companies. But there's something else going on here now, right now, too, that might be interesting to just bring up a little bit, just to take a note of it. Well, we're going, at the end of the day, if you were reading the news, we've got a financial apocalypse about to happen, that there's going to be a sequester, that the government is going to essentially have to shut down some of its operations because it has to cut $85 billion as of midnight tonight, which means that there's terrible, horrible, unbelievable things going to happen. The economy is going to go to hell. But is that what the market is saying? Would you say that that's, that looks like a market that is ready to run and hide under a couch? Would you assess it that way? What would you say? Just look at it. Does that look like some huge drop? Everything's going to hell? No, that's exactly right. Look at what the markets are saying. The markets are basically meh. So sometimes you have to read the news and hear the politicians, but then look at what the markets themselves say. The markets are saying, yeah, that's not really something that's worrying us right now. Any worry that they had about this would already have been taken care of. The prices would already have been reflecting that days in advance. By now, the markets are saying, well, whatever we think is going to happen, we've already got it in the prices. Any news right now, today, not much to worry about on that. Now, let me get you to something a little more interesting here. I am trying my best, and somehow it looks to me, I know what I'm going to have to do. I'm going to have to use another browser because it looks to me like Internet Explorer has been hijacked by the Ask toolbar. So some, yeah, let me just do it that way. Now let me do http://, and I'm going to do finance.google.com. Oh, that Ask toolbar has gotten everything. Look at that. Oh, heck. Okay, let's try something else here. See if I can do Yahoo. It's gotten, it's hijacked everything that I'm doing here. Finance, good. There we go. Now we can do, okay, now. Thank goodness. Now, I'm going to pull in a stock symbol here. Just something, I don't know what I can, I think I, something unusual, something, oh, I don't know. Let me do Verizon. Whoops, Verizon. Okay, there it is, VZ. Okay, here is the stock market data for Verizon. And I want to just bring up a couple of things here so that you can know that we can get these kinds of this kind of information that we need to study, analyze, use formulas, and all that. First of all, the beta, 0.35. Assess it for me. Just looking at that number tells you a whole lot of story in it. 0.35. What do you say about this company seeing that beta? Any guess at all?
So, beta for market portfolio is 1.
So what are you seeing here?
There's only 35% of that.
Yes. Well, that's very good. Pat him on the buttock. That's good. take me a little further. Go ahead. Take me a little further. This a scary, risky stock, or is this a grandma stock? No, I wouldn't say that this thing is about as exciting as oatmeal, okay? 0.35, seriously, that's essentially, you watch this stock, you would be have more thrills watching paint dry. That is the kind of stock this is. At 0.35, that stock is actually something that you would put in a very low-risk portfolio, or you would use it to offset something that was risky in your portfolio. Because this thing is just parked there, and as you said, this thing has 35% of the systematic risk of the market portfolio. Just 35%. So the market portfolio swings up and down. The part of this company's volatility for which you can expect a reward is only 35% of that. So if the market portfolio is the Cobra roller coaster at Six Flags, this is the Tonka Truck Kitty roller coaster on the other side of the park. A few things that I want to bring up that I have talked about before. Market cap. The market cap, and I mentioned this, but I will emphasize it again. sort of like a flashbang grenade there. Okay. The market cap is the number of shares of this company outstanding. In other words, the total amount of ownership units times the price per share of those ownership units. In other words, this is the total owner's value of the corporation according to the market. This number is $133.03 billion. Geez, that's a lot of money. Okay. Now I'm going to do something real quick here. SEC filings. See if I can get the SEC filings. Balance sheet. Here's the balance sheet. I'm going to show you something here. Balance sheet. Let's go down here and see what the balance sheet says the total owner's equity is. The balance sheet says, well, as of the last fiscal year, that total shareholders' equity is $35,970,000,000. These numbers are in millions. So the balance sheet says that the total value of the owner's position is $35,970,000,000. Now let's go back. Well, that sucked. And see, $133.03 billion. So which is right, the balance sheet or the market? Are the accountants right, or is the market right?
Well, the balance sheet only takes a certain time period, right?
Well, no, that's the accumulated value of this corporation according to the generally accepted accounting principles consistently applied. The accumulated net incomes minus dividends plus the amounts of money that the shareholders paid in to get their positions, all taken together, are on the balance sheet at, what was it, $35 billion about? But the market cap, the number of shares outstanding times the price per share, the market price per share, is $133.03 billion. Which do you believe? Yeah.
Well, the balance sheet doesn't account for changes in the price of the stock.
That's right.
So.
That's right. So which one's right?
In relative terms, this would be right, but the balance sheet has to account for the par value of the common stock, whichever it is.
Well, that's a par value would be only about $10 million here.
Yeah, so you could say this is right now relatively.
Okay. You've got a balance sheet there, and you've got a market price. The market price of this stock says that the company is worth $133 billion. The balance sheet says that the owner's position is only $35 billion. So if you were to have, let's say that we have come to the end of time. It's the zombie apocalypse, okay? Now, I can give you a piece of paper that says, this is how you survive, or I can take you to a place where you can survive. Which would you choose? Mm-hmm. I can give you a number on a piece of paper that says this is how much this company is worth, or I can give you a share of stock that says that it is worth more. Which can you sell, the piece of paper or the share of stock? So which do you believe, the piece of paper called a balance sheet or the share of common stock? The reality of it is that the only thing that matters in the stock market is what the price per share is. The balance sheet can tell you whatever it wants, but that doesn't buy you your cheeseburger fries and a large milkshake. That stock price does. You see, the market, that market's wrong, well, go out there and tell the market it's wrong. I don't think they'll even hear you. You see, that's the whole thing is, the market matters. The market matters. The market says this stock creates a value of the company, if you take all the shares together and times them out, of $133 billion. That is what you can take to the bank, what you can buy, what you can sell. The balance sheet, you can't sell and buy anything on that. It's just a piece of paper. That thing right there is the actual thing that you can make money on or lose money on, is what the market says, not what the balance sheet said. Now, let me show you something here. Okay, just to give you a quick little piece of information here. One thing that is sometimes interesting to look at is if you are looking at a company stock right now, we see that Verizon is up 0.18 a little more than a third of a percent. Very small movements the market is making. I'm trying to think of, I always have a problem with this. Thinking of companies right off the top of my head to put into this right now. I suppose I can go to one that I know. Target. Okay. Beta. There's another thrilling beta. Half of the systematic risk of the market. Market cap, $40.97 billion. Let's look at the balance sheet, see what the balance sheet says the value of the company's ownership is. $15.8 billion. $15.8 billion versus $40.97 billion. You see, the problem is that the balance sheet is just historical information from pieces of paper, sales receipts and payments for goods and services, and also following rules that you can't take all the expenses when they occur, but you have to capitalize big expenses and all that kind of stuff. And it doesn't take into account the potential future expectations on cash flow. Remember that price of that stock has nothing to do with the past. It has to do with the present value of the future expected cash flows. That's what that perpetuity formula is. It's a present value formula. The balance sheet is the history. The price is what we expect that company to do in the future. In this case, this company, we expect its future expected cash flows, net cash flows, free cash flows, as a present value, they are worth right now about $63. And it's lost a little bit of time. I'm trying to think of, I always freeze up when I'm trying to think of companies to show here. What else would be something that would be worth, oh,
What's a defense industry company? Halliburton. Yeah. Big defense company. Up 0.24%. It's got a beta. Oh, whoa. Now there is a serious beta up on the top side. 1.84. But it's an interesting thing. Halliburton is a defense industry company. In a market that is slightly going down, this is a defense industry company is coming upward, which means that the market is bearish on basically war companies right now, which seems to be kind of contrary because the sequester is supposed to cut military spending and all that. That's not what this market is saying about the defense industry companies. Businesses, look, and this is an old rule. War is a business. And no matter what, where you are, what year it is, business is always good when it comes to war. And apparently, everyone thinks it's good right now. But here we go, beta of 1.82. That is a very large beta. This, in other words, this is saying that the market premium is magnified by a factor of 1.82. So, in other words, this stock has 182% of the non-diversifiable risk of the market portfolio. So its overall volatility is probably quite dramatic, but its part that you would expect a reward for is still pretty dramatic. So you would have this in a high-risk portfolio, or you would put it in to balance out stocks you had in your portfolio that were below the risk that you wanted. Now, one more here, just to see what else. Oh, let's try this. Dow Chemical. Little bit on the shave down. See how it's behaving, though? Beta of 1.8. Dow has that, too? Yeah. Well, goes to show you. That's interesting. Okay. What would be? SPDR Gold. Doesn't have a beta because it's an ADR. Okay, let's try that again. Gold. Randolph. Barrick Gold. Look at that. You see how close it is to zero? It's almost negative. Do you see it? Remember what I was telling you about betas of gold stocks? Gold mining, there it is. It's not negative, but boy, is that thing shaving close. That thing is virtually has the risk, the non-diversifiable risk of a treasury bill. In other words, this stock doesn't react hardly at all to the market swings. It does its own thing. That doesn't mean it doesn't move. It just doesn't move with the market hardly at all. And as you can see, notice that this one is swinging really hard today. But its movement with respect to the market is virtually nil. Let me try that again. That was almost got one there. I should really check these out. I try to avoid. That's not an ADR, is it? Yeah, I should have known that one wasn't going to do that. Those aren't. But I can try one more here just to show you this. Low beta, but not negative. But anyway, let me do one more thing here. I'm trying to think what could I do here? Oh well, let me just do CVS. CVS, Caremark. Wow, look at that. That's non-diversifiable risk. Again, this doesn't tell you the overall risk. This just tells you the risk that you could expect to get a reward for. Virtually the market portfolio. Virtually the market portfolio. And one thing more here. Walmart. .39, low risk. Now, why are we seeing companies like Walmart and Verizon with such low betas? What is there a speculation you could give on why that would be happening? Just off the top of your head, you got a guess at what would be, why that would be? We see these big, huge companies. A lot of them have these low betas. Is there a reason for that? Yeah.
Very low risk.
Basically, they're so large, it would take virtually the planet exploding for them to die. I mean, they're, in a sense, these companies are too big to fail. They're just, no, it's not going to happen. Their stock isn't exciting. They're not glamour stocks that you get really big thrills out of watching, but that's just what they do. They exist, they do their business, and they'll never go away. Never. And that's why you would see, for example, like this. Apple. Low beta. Massive, massive market cap. Basically, it's a company that will always be around. Try Microsoft, MSFT. Oh, isn't that interesting? Wait a minute, I thought big companies didn't die. Why does Microsoft have a higher beta than Apple? Any guess? This is where I want you to be by the end of the semester. Certainly not at this point, but I want you to start beginning to think about these. Why do we see these things? Why does Microsoft have a higher beta? In other words, a higher systematic risk than Apple? Is there some reason for that? Well, that would that mean that Microsoft is the underdog and it's going to be riskier than Apple is over the next 10 years or so? That's a possibility. That's quite a possibility. But remember that the only way you get a higher expected return is to take a higher risk. So what I would read from this is that the good news is that the market expects Microsoft to be more of a risk-taking company than Apple over the next foreseeable years. In other words, the market is saying, look at Apple. iPhone, iPhone 2, iPhone 3, iPhone 4, goody, it's white now. iPhone 5, oh gee whiz, it's a little bit lighter. iPad 1, iPad 2, iPad 3 with an app that turns it into toilet paper. You see what Apple is doing? You know that, why haven't they gotten an app for that yet? You know, what the hell? But look, you see Apple? What is it really inventing? Hardly anything now. Microsoft has damn well better come back from the dead because essentially, as you pointed out, it's in competition with Apple that's sitting there, we're so big, no, nothing can stop us. Every hipster, there'll be hipsters forever buying our damn phones. But at the same time, what's Apple going to do for its next trick? Buy Instagram so that hipsters can take pictures of their food and not have to leave their Macs? I shouldn't be harsh like that. Well, yes, I should. Don't be a hipster. That's all I have for you. Go home.